What's going on? Thanks for tuning in to the MMA podcast, UFC 227, Dillashaw versus Garbrandt, Johnson versus Cejudo, right around the corner, August 4th, the Staples Center, LA. We are here to break that card down, joined actually this time by a couple familiar faces, of course, as usual, joined by P-Money, Sweet Pappy Jones. What's going on, Pat?
Oh, Jake, we're just chilling. It's a beautiful day, amped up for this LA card. Something a little closer in the neck of my woods, and very excited we got another companion on the show today.
And you heard him just about a week ago, joined the podcast to break down a little UFC Calgary. He's back to break down another card. He's on Twitter at Westland Eagle AH. It's the Westland Eagle. Alan, what's going on, my man?
Yoboseyo. Hello, everybody from South Korea. No, I'm actually in Louisiana. This is the Westland Eagle. This is two times in 2 weeks that I'm with you guys. So if you can bear it, we'll have fun today.
Definitely. Is he in Oregon? Is he in South Korea? Is he in Louisiana? You never know. He's globetrotting the world. None of us will be in Southern Cali for the event. Technically, you will, Pat, but I don't think you're going to be able to be at the event. In fact, I believe you told me you were working like exactly when the UFC takes place, which really sucks. But I hope you will be able to stream it. We would never stream. Purchase the pay-per-view on a mobile carrier legally for $59 to watch it in HD, like Uncle Dana would want us to.
Purchase it through Fight Pass and then Chromecast it onto our TVs via our mobile devices. Absolutely.
Yes. And if you want to put it in another room, just spend another $60 and put it in another room, just like Uncle Dana would want us to, and like we do for every pay-per-view event. UFC 227 going down at the Staples Center. One card actually just got pulled off of it, I believe, yesterday. That was Bitch Koea taking on Irene Aldana. So a fight between Ricardo Ramos and Kyung Ho Kang being moved from the early Fight Pass prelims to the FX prelims. It'll be timed out, as most of these are. The main card starting at 10 Eastern, the FX prelims at 8, and I guess the UFC Fight Pass prelims will bump up from 6 to 6:30 now that there's one less fight. One interesting fight standing out to me, at least on the early prelims on Fight Pass, Marlon Vera, a name we've heard about a lot, and didn't spend his whole career in the UFC, but now, you know, later in his career has made that switch. He's a big favorite against Waluigi Buren, whatever this guy's name is, Wooligi. I'm just going to call him Waluigi. I think he is deservedly a big favorite over Waluigi. I mentioned Kyung Ho Kang versus Ricardo Ramos. This, of course, will be a big fight on our boy Alan's radar, and I'm looking forward to him breaking it down. And I'm not just picking him because Alan's on the line, even though he is an underdog, too. Ricardo Ramos has looked excellent, you know, looked great with that. I forget who his opponent was, but landed that impressive spinning shit strike a couple fights ago, and his striking is on point, but his striking has looked on point against guys who kind of take a breather and give him the room to do that. I think with Kyung Ho Kang's style, which is more of a pressing pressure style, I think it's going to make things a little difficult for Ricardo Ramos, so I'm taking Kyung Ho Kang in that fight. Another fight on the prelims between Ricky Simon and Montel Jackson. No, not the talk show host, although I wish it was. Should be pretty close. I'm going with the favorite, Ricky Simon. And then you have Brett Johns taking on Pedro Munhoz. The pikey Brett Johns coming off a loss to Aljamain Sterling. It was the first loss of his career. But, you know, he's going up against another guy in Munhoz that has a very complete toolbox like Sterling. This will mean, I think, a lot in Brett Johns' career, because Brett Johns had to go back to the drawing board and really take a hard look at his strengths and weaknesses after losing to Aljamain Sterling a few months ago on that Barboza Lee card. Has he made the changes he needs to in order to defeat an all-around fighter like Sterling? He certainly will be tested against Pedro Munhoz, who is a minus 240 favorite to take out the Pikey on the headline of the prelims, which I thought that was a slur at first against like gypsy people up in the UK, but I guess his official name is the Pikey. So if it's offensive, I apologize to all the gypsy Pikey people out there. I thoroughly enjoyed the movie Snatch, but I will be rooting for the colorful personality in Brett Johns, but I think I'm taking Pedro Munhoz to win that fight. Pat, I'll throw it to you first. What do you think about these prelims? And then Alan can jump in after.
Well, these prelims definitely seem to be more suited towards the hardcore fan of the mixed martial arts and UFC. If you're watching all the Fight Pass fights, I mean, you might have seen Wooly G. Buren versus Rolando D.
Waluigi?
Waluigi, I love that. That should be his nickname. If he does, it looks like he does not have one. It should be Waluigi Buren. His debut against Rolando D. was a fantastic fight. I seem to recall it being quite the back-and-forth war. Very entertaining. Him versus Chito Vera should make for a very nice opener on the Fight Pass prelims. Daniel Dynamite Taylor versus Wiley Zhang. Oh boy, I'm just going to be butchering him tonight. It should be a great fight. 16-1 versus 9-3. Taylor's got some good big show experience. I think that's going to serve her well. Victories over Jessica Penne and C. Ho Ham. Zhang 16-1 though, only lost by decision. Going to be making her UFC debut. Should be a good time there. Alex Perez versus Jose Torres. Both these guys on some good streaks right now. Jose Torres undefeated 8-0 in his career. And Alex Perez 20-4 on a 2-fight win streak right now. Should be some great fights overall. And Pedro Munhoz versus Brett Johns. I'm really liking that for the featured bout. Definitely a super super fight at 135 pounds. Both these guys definitely seem to be in the top 10, top 15, very highly rated at 135 pounds. Some pretty decent matchups here to start out the prelims.
Yeah, like Jake and Pappy said, I definitely think this is more suited towards the hardcore MMA fans, like a lot of us who probably listen to this show. But I'm going to start off. Yeah, the Buren fight, that definitely, Rolando D, that was a back-and-forth fight. I think it was a unanimous decision or a split decision, but he definitely was game. He's going to be a game opponent for Vera. I think the Vera, though, is a much more adequate fighter than Buren. Buren was a little bit green, if you want to say. Hadn't really had like any like big matchups or anything, but it's definitely, it'll be an exciting fight. A lot of people probably won't watch because it'll be on Fight Pass, and not very many people use Fight Pass. The Daniel Taylor and Weili Zhang, she, you know, there's a lot of hype coming out of China around her, especially with her record. There's a couple of good, you know, women fighters that have come out of China. I don't remember the other girl's name, but she won on the Shanghai card. They're probably going to be pushing those fighters because they're going back to China. So the UFC's probably got a lot riding on, you know, a lot of these Chinese fighters doing well. But I think she matches up really well with Taylor. Taylor, you know, a lot of people don't think that she won that Sohyeom fight. She's done really good against some of the other girls. She's just a lot smaller. She's very small. For 115, she probably should be an atom weight. But since we don't have atom weight in the UFC, you know, she's doing what she can. She's on the big show. I think she's actually like a police officer. So I'm going to go ahead and give her my support because she's out there sticking her neck out for the rest of America. You know, I think she's based out of Houston, Texas. I guess this Torres and Perez fight, I don't really know much about it. We're going to move on to the FX prelims. And my boy, Kyung Ho, Mr. Perfect Kong. I'm calling it. He's going to be the guy to beat Ramos in the UFC. He's too dangerous off his back. If he gets hurt and goes to his back like in the last fight, he's just going to put you in a triangle and tap you out, man, or put you to sleep. So look for big things from Kong. He had a 4-year layoff and came back and continued his win streak, moved it to 3 fights in a row. And if he wouldn't have got hosed on the Chico Camus fight and, you know, basically lost a hometown decision to a guy that he controlled for 8 minutes, he'd be 4-0 in the UFC. So look for big things from him. The Ricky Simon and Jackson fight, I really believe, just because of the style that both guys bring to the fight. I think Simon, you know, he's just a really game opponent. He's ready to go out there and slug it out. I think that probably should have been the main fight on the FX prelims. But let's be honest, it really doesn't matter because not even 300,000 people are going to even watch this stuff. And most of it will probably be people DVRing it and not even watching it. So the Munoz and Johns fight, it's very interesting because it's like a stylistic, you know, clash. You got the wrestler that can stand and trade versus the guy who's crafty striker. Looked a little bit slow against Aljo and also had trouble in the grappling with Aljo. So, you know, I look for Johns to bounce back and probably deliver a fight of the night performance or at least win a decision. But definitely going to be interesting. Most of these fights will be exciting. It's not like we're getting terrible, you know, matchups. It's just they're not big names.
Yeah, and speaking about big names, you know, that kind of takes me into the next thing that I wanted to talk about. So nice lead in to my segue. Before we talk about the main card, I just want to talk about straight up, is this main card garbage? And I'll go ahead and say, you know, I would never call any of these fighters themselves garbage fighters. But, you know, this is the biggest card that the UFC is doing in a big span. You know, they had that big card at International Fight Week, UFC 226. This is actually only one of two cards they're doing in August. After this card, I think they're taking a 2 or 3 week long layoff. So this is a big event. This is, you know, a pay-per-view event. And I have no problem putting on people who you don't really know about. But let's at least put on ranked fights. Like, if you're going to have a ranking system and have a top 15 system, I get the fight between Cub Swanson and Hanato Moicano, and I'll go into that fight more. But these two fights you have kind of sandwiched in the middle, this women's strawweight fight between Pollyanna Viana and J.J. Aldrich, I have no idea if they originally planned this to being on the main card or if for some reason they really want to introduce us to one or two of these competitors. Thiago Santos is, I guess, an inch, I don't know, this is, you know, he does have a very important win on his record against Lionheart Smith, but the matchup against Kevin Holland, who is, you know, another new face in the UFC, which I'll get into more during the breakdown, but, I don't know, this just seems like, and I've already accepted that, you know, in doing more cards, in doing all of these, you know, Fight Pass cards and Fox Sports 1 cards, you're going to lose a little bit of depth off of your pay-per-views, and they're not going to be as strong as they were back when you know, were only doing 15 or 20 cards a year. But even to look back to more recent pay-per-views, after the co-main event, here is what we've gotten the last few pay-per-view fights. We got Perry Felder, Pettis Chiesa, Roundtree Saki. Those were all fun fights and fun to talk about. Ranked guys, 225. Holm Anderson, that was an intriguing fight. Tuvas Arlovski, that kind of, you know, represented a passing of the guard at heavyweight. And of course, the Mike Jackson CM Punk fight, which say what you will about that booking. UFC 224, Mackenzie Dern was on it. John Lineker versus Brian Kelleher, Lyoto Machida, and Vitor Belfort. I won't go any further back, but the point being that this just feels like one of the more weaker garbage pay-per-view main cards in a long time. And I hate being one of those fans who gripes, because so often I hear fans griping about, you know, a shit card that actually has a lot of blue chip prospects and fighters that are good we just haven't heard about yet. But I don't know. It's just kind of a head scratcher seeing like multiple people on this UFC 227 main card that don't even have a Wikipedia page. Like, come on, you gotta have at least a fucking Wikipedia page. So, I don't know. Alan, do you kind of resonate with me in lauding the depth on this card, or am I missing something here?
No, I mean, there's points for and against what you're saying. You're very much validated whenever you start talking about name value, and how the UFC loads up on these, you know, Fox and Fox Sports 1 cards. I mean, I would never pay money, especially the inflated prices that come with the pay-per-views, for the most part, to go to any of these fights. Because you're talking like you can get a $150 floor seat for one of these Fox cards, and you're going to see all the names that you've been watching for the last, like, you know, 5 to 10 years. You're going to, you know, just every big name in the MMA world is going to be on these cards. And then you go to these pay-per-views and there's like, you know, maybe 6 guys that you recognize on the entire card. And, you know, whenever I start talking about these fights, you know, like this weekend's pay-per-view with guys at work that are just casual fans that, you know, only recognize like the big names, they don't even have any interest, because I guess it's the character building. The UFC lacks the awareness or the even ability maybe to build new stars with the way that they treat some of their champions like DJ. There's not enough name value behind these new fighters, so nobody learns who they are. And, you know, whenever you put them on a pay-per-view, it's not going to sell because nobody's interested outside of your core audience. You're not going to gain new attention to the product because you're not offering, you know, any reason to care about these fighters. You know, they're just fighters. It's just another fight. You know, it's the same thing as you know, and for some of us, that's okay. Like, I don't mind, you know. But for your casual fan that you're trying to attract to get them to come back and buy that next pay-per-view after the big one, you know, they're not going to do it. So, yeah, I see where you're coming from. And I agree that to some extent that the UFC fails on these numbered pay-per-view cards to, you know, with the placement of certain names to, you know, build a product that will make you want to pay $50 or $60.
Yeah, I'm very much along those lines of thinking as well. I mean, if you're trying to convince the majority of your fan base to buy this fight card, which is nowadays going for, what, $70 in HD, versus, you know, when most days it's on Fight Pass, which is a $10 a month subscription, or it's on Big Fox or Fox Sports 1, just, you know, as a part of the your television provider package you normally pay for. Like, you don't think about those costs, you know. So when they want you to shell out $70, putting on 2 title fights, that's a great start for me. That's one of the best ways to get me into a pay-per-view. But then to have 3 fights that are very much, I would say, relatively insignificant in their divisions, I mean, that's not the way to do it. I need top 5 kind of contender fights to go with my title fights if I am to be expected to shell out this kind of money. I mean, when I was 18, 21 years old, and, you know, yeah, you'd round up 10 of the guys, everybody pitches in $5, you know, no problem. But, you know, as getting into the adult phase of my life, you know, it's either spend $70 or, you know, go down to the local watering hole where you're paying $10 for a cover and then proceeding to spend about at least $60 more. So either way, it works out being a good amount of money. So to get me to invest in that, I need to have compelling matchups. And I would think it's relatively simple. It's only 5 fights. You know, if you are stacking too much in 1 month, because there are some great cards in July. But, you know, think through to conclusion. Save 3 fights to put those on with your double title fight. I mean, for me, it may be enough to get me into the pay-per-view, but it's, I don't know, it's going to be hard. I definitely need, I need compelling top-ranked matchups all the way across the board.
And that kind of rolls us into the main card. Like I mentioned, Cub Swanson versus Hinato Moikano, a fun fight, a blue chip matchup, you know, a veteran versus a up-and-coming guy. You know, I like Cub as a gatekeeper there for you know, that ranked elite at featherweight. And, you know, I hate to question the guy, but, you know, especially after coming off back-to-back losses against Brian Ortega and Frankie Edgar, which are two of the division's finest. I don't know. I just see this fight going the way of Hinato Moikano. Vegas agrees with me as well, as Moikano is a pretty sizable favorite at minus 370. Another favorite at minus 210 is Pollyanna Viana. I feel like Viana, just in, you know, I've not seen that many fights of either one, but just from what I've read up on it, I feel like Viana probably has that bigger MMA toolbox, and once she is able to close the distance and clinch up the matchup, that Viana will have the advantage. And then Kevin Holland versus Thiago Santos. This is another interesting matchup. Holland, a guy we haven't heard much of. I know Holland, I guess, is making his UFC debut after going on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. Looked scary, an extremely long striker, but I don't know. This is a Thiago Santos who, like I mentioned before, has a very notable win, and I would say a relevant win against Anthony Lionheart Smith. So it's hard to go against the veteran Santos, who, again, is a big favorite in Vegas at minus 345. So I'm going with Santos in that fight right before your two title fights. Pat, who are you thinking about picking, and what do you think about these first three fights that kick off our UFC 227 $70 main card that we're all definitely going to pay?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Either that or just wait for 5 minutes after the pay-per-view's over. And then they essentially play all the best parts on the post-fight show on Fox Sports 1. Spoiler alert. But, no, I'm probably going to pay for the whole thing, Jake. Alan, what about you guys? But, oh, my goodness. No. versus Hinato Moikano. I mean, I got to root for the hometown guy in Cub. He does have the losses to Brian Ortega and Frankie Edgar, but he does share that common loss with Hinato Moikano. He was submitted by Brian Ortega as well. And I mean, Swanson has been around for a long time. He's a fairly solid commodity, and man, he had a nice 4-fight win streak prior to his submission loss to Brian Ortega. And he's really fought the best of the best, and most of the time he gets the job done. He only has faltered against the best of the best. I feel like I want to give Cub the pick in this one with the experience advantage. Hinato does look like a very solid prospect, though. Aside from his setback to Ortega, I mean, got right back on track with his victory over Calvin Cutter. Has victories over Jeremy Stevens and the sidebar to Hukov. So he's definitely looked super solid in his UFC career so far. But I got to give it to Cub just for his veteran status. And he is a crafty veteran at that. He's got tools everywhere it goes. Pollyanna Viana, versus JJ Aldrick. I mean, this one definitely seems to be tailor made for Pollyanna. She's never gone to the decision, in the fight she has won. 4 TKOs, 6 submissions. JJ Aldrick, she has one submission loss on her record, another by decision, 6-2 overall, couple TKOs, 4 decisions. I feel like they're setting this one up for Vienna here to do what she does best. I'm going to roll with her in this one. I think Vegas is on the money here, as they, about 70% of the time, they are. And Thiago Santos versus Kevin Holland. Holland's making his UFC debut. Man, and I mean, Thiago Santos, not the best look getting knocked out by David Branch in his last fight. Branch, at least traditionally not known for being the strongest striker, more of the grappling prowess. But, I mean, he has tools everywhere. I'm wondering if Thiago maybe was just underestimating David Branch in that fight. But he's got an interesting fight coming up here with Kevin Holland. Jake, as you mentioned, Holland being a long fighter, I mean, there's a chance he can get in there, or there's a chance he could just miss wildly and Thiago could do what he does best and come through with the big TKO. Holland has never been TKO'd, but I don't think that matters to Thiago Santos. He's one of those dudes who definitely has the power to finish guys who have never been finished before. So I think I'm going to go with Thiago to give Kevin a rude welcoming to the UFC.
Yeah, I'm just going to say one thing. J.J. Aldridge, dog shit, belongs in Invicta.
Damn.
No reason why that should be on a UFC pay-per-view card. Bam. Ooh,
hot take.
Ow.
Any thoughts on the Cub fight or the other fight? Oh,
yeah, as far as the Cub fight, man, it's really hard to pick a winner here because Moisiano was you know, on the cards. I think he was winning that Brian Ortega fight up until the submission. I mean, I think he was up on the scorecards, as usually that's what happens to Ortega until he pulls off that third round submission like he did against like three consecutive opponents. But man, that's going to be a crazy fight, because has Cub Swanson ever been in a boring fight? Does that man know how to have a boring fight? That dude bought $26,000 worth of tickets because it's at the Staples Center in his home, you know, home area. And for him, this is like the mecca of fighting because he's a California-based fighter. And for him to fight in, you know, the arena that he grew up watching sports in, you know he's going to bring it. I mean, he might go out there and die. So Moisiano, great opponent, beat Jeremy Stevens, was beating Ortega until he got submitted. He's not going to make that mistake again. He's going to go out there. I think Moisiano is probably going to take it. Cub's up there in age. He's going to go out there and give it his best try. But, you know, sometimes with these younger guys, it's just not enough. So I'm going to go with Moisiano. I think that also has a possibility of being fight of the night, or at least a performance bonus from either guy, whoever gets that fight finished. So, yeah. But J.J. Aldridge, dog shit.
Wow, that's a hot take about J.J. Aldridge from our boy, the Westland Eagle. Moving up now to the two championship fights, T.J. Dillashaw and Demetrius Johnson looking to defend their titles. Demetrius Johnson going for a record 12th title defense. Before we get into the matchup between him and former title challenger Henry Cejudo, I have seen a little bit of debate about which one of these fights should have been the main event and which should have been the co-main. The argument for Dillashaw Garbrandt, maybe that matchup has been a little bit more anticipated. But, you know, just imagine going back in GSP's prime, or Anderson Silva's prime, or John Jones's prime, or any of these guys, even currently Daniel Cormier's prime. And Demetrius Johnson is in that pantheon of fighters who, you know, is in the consideration for greatest of all time. He is undoubtedly in his prime. You know, he is the only fighter ever to even have attempted going for a 12th title defense, which he's doing on Saturday. And he's not even the main event of his own card. So I see both sides of the spectrum. Alan, What do you think? Should Johnson have gotten billing as the main event, just considering his status as one of the greatest fighters of all time?
You know, there's a lot of speculation going around as to, oh, DJ got offered the fight, but he was injured, and he offered to fight later in the year against, you know, TJ or, you know, at 125, but then he wanted TJ to go down to 25 and make weight, and then he would fight him. Let's just be honest here. If DJ wanted to be on the main billing to headline this card, he should have went up to 135, the heavier weight class, and fought for that title. Because we all know that's how these things work. The heavier weight class with title fights always gets top billing, for the most part, 99% of the time. And, yeah, he had the opportunity. He chose not to. I don't feel sorry for him, but I'll throw it to P-Money.
I mean, I'm not exactly crying tears for Demetrius Johnson over here. I mean, he's doing all right. I mean, he's the winningest champion in UFC history. His record speaks for itself. But be that as it may, I think his record is what necessitates his main event position. I mean, TJ Dillashaw versus Cody Garbrandt, that's going to be a great fight. Their first fight was one of the more entertaining two-round fights I've ever seen. I mean, as back and forth as a two-round fight could ever get. And some would say a little bit more drama than perhaps a Demetrius Johnson fight may have. Demetrius Johnson, I mean, he's been finishing pretty much everybody. The only people he hasn't finished as of late have been John Dodson and Timothy Elliott, but Ray Bourque, Wilson Hayes. The first time he fought Henry Cejudo, he destroyed Henry Cejudo in like less than 3 minutes, just beat him silly. He's been running through people. Chris Carriasso, Ali the Blood Doper Bagautinov, put a clinic on him. Joseph Benavidez knocked him out in 2 minutes. I mean, he's finishing people. He's been one of the most dominant fighters the UFC. He's been the most dominant fighter that the UFC has ever seen. I mean, I guess he would have to break Anderson Silva's, what was it, 16-0 streak, but he's already beat Silva's title defense streak, and he does have a body of work in the UFC and WEC at 135 pounds as well. It's crazy to me that he is the co-main to TJ and Cody when these two have kind of just traded the title back and forth. TJ, like, literally just got the title back. Before that, you know, he had a couple defenses. But I certainly don't see where either of these gets a spot, either of these fighters gets a spot over Demetrius. It's disrespectful.
Man, and it is to a point. But when you look at it, you got to make the most interesting fight the main event. They should have made Lesnar versus Hunt the main event of UFC 200 over Tate versus Amanda Nunes. And I can appreciate them not slotting a non-title fight over a title fight, because that's just another level of disrespect. But, you know, when it comes down to it, these are two title fights. Like Alan mentioned, 35 is a heavier weight class. And I think undeniably there's more interest in TJ versus Cody than there is against DJ versus Cejudo. For a lot of reasons, the shit-talking aspect, the whole drama behind the TJ-Cody fight and kind of lack thereof between Cejudo and Mighty Mouse. The fact that they both have fought before, the DJ-Cejudo fight was very one-sided, and the Dillashaw versus Garbrandt fight was very back and forth. You know, Dillashaw was on roller skates to end the first round and then came back roaring and finished the fight the next thing you know. So for a lot of reasons, I don't blame the UFC at all for making this the main event and Dillashaw Garbrandt. But let's take a step back and break down the co-main, Johnson versus Cejudo. I'm actually seeing a lot of people take Cejudo here, and even though Vegas wouldn't necessarily agree with them, I think Demetrius is minus 485, a giant favorite in Vegas. You can see why, you know, DJ is getting to a point in his career where we start to wonder, you know, how many times can he defend this belt before he reaches the end of the road? And as far as stylistic matchups, we've seen so many times where you see a big upset and the guy pulling off the upset has incredible wrestling. Henry Cejudo might be the best wrestler in the UFC right now, at least when you go by his achievements in wrestling, you know, being an Olympic gold medalist. And you know what? I might be on the Henry Cejudo bandwagon if I hadn't have gone back and rewatched that first fight between the two. And Demetrius Johnson, even though there seemed to be a second there where you held your breath and you wondered if Cejudo was going to take the fight over, Mighty Mouse dealt with his wrestling with relative ease. And, you know, I really kind of expect more of the same in this fight. I think Henry Cejudo will be the champion once Johnson either retires or leaves the weight class. Because I believe Cejudo is a little bit younger, being 31. Or no, they're both actually 31 years old. And Cejudo is a little bit older, but obviously not as many fights under his belt, and I would guess would probably stick around longer, especially if it meant being able to become champion. So I think Cejudo probably will be the first champ once Mighty Mouse leaves 25, but it's hard to pick against the single most successful champion in UFC history in a matchup where the first time around he whooped him in the first round. So, for that, you know, I can appreciate all the love for Cejudo, and the guy's got a hell of a fighting style as a tenacious wrestler. But like I said, for five or six times already during this breakdown, I'm going with DJ Pat.
I mean, you have to go with DJ, especially if you rewatch the first fight. I mean, Cejudo got him down. DJ pops back up, as you mentioned, with relative ease. It was DJ completely outclassed Henry Cejudo in every aspect. And going into their first fight, I was very much thinking, well, if anybody could upset Demetrius, it would be Henry Cejudo, Olympic gold medalist in wrestling in his weight class. Solid hands, some good fundamentals with the hands. You know, seems to have a good package to deal with DJ. Got absolutely smoked in the clinch, distance strikes. The wrestling game proved very inefficient. And it was not even 3 minutes he was in the cage with Demetrius Johnson. It was such an impressive performance. Against an Olympic gold medalist, I mean, that was definitely a highlight for Demetrius. Even with the tuning up that Henry Cejudo has been doing, and it does look like he's been continuing to refine his skills and get better, when you get outclassed by someone just in the way that he did, how much is it possible for you to catch up to that level? No matter how much you fine-tune it, if DJ's already that much better, if he just keeps improving a little bit, he's just always going to be outside of your reach. I think DJ has another great performance. You know, I would love to see it maybe go a little bit longer, maybe for Cejudo's sake more than anybody else's. But no, I think this will definitely be a beat down in line of what the first one was. I think Demetrius gets another TKO.
Yeah, I'm just going to go out there and say it. I don't think anybody beats Demetrius Johnson at 125 pounds. We've seen time and time again where, you know, oh, this is the next big thing, the next hot fighter, the next top prospect. Henry Cejudo is no longer that. He lost a split decision to Joseph Benavidez. He got knocked out by DJ already. I mean, he's only won two other fights since then. So how much better really could he be? And I just don't see it. I just think DJ, the way that he trains, it's just on another level. especially like when designed for MMA, the way that they had that training set up for him, focused around him up there, up north, it's ridiculous to watch like all the things that he can do. And I just think he's a once in a lifetime athlete. I mean, he's like the Michael Jordan or, you know, LeBron of freaking MMA. I mean, there's just nobody else who can compete with him. And we've seen that. Anybody that comes out and has a close first round with him, they immediately go on the defensive in the second round. They immediately get backed up against the cage in the second round. Like, Tim Elliott was probably one of, like, the closer fights that he's had recently. And still, that was, like, a unanimous decision for Demetrius. So I just don't see anybody posing any type of threat to him at 125 pounds. He's just too freaking good.
Yeah, going for fight number 14 in a row, title defense number 12. The guy is currently in the process of stringing together a historic run. And the scary thing is, you know, like I mentioned, he's 31. He's not like, and he's shown no signs of slowing down. You know, when Silva was getting toward the end of his run, he had a few shaky fights. Chael tested him. It, you know, he was getting older. We could see that we were, you know, getting toward the end of what this was. But Johnson, I mean, shit, his last fight against Ray Borg, that armbar where, like, he took him down and on the takedown, like maneuvered around him, lynched in the... I mean, that was one of the craziest things I've ever seen. He has shown absolutely no sign of slowing down, and it's been a pleasure to watch him fight, and it's hard not to expect title defense number 12 to come down the pipe. And on Saturday at UFC 227, getting to the main event, Dillashaw versus Garbrandt, a fight for the ages. Both of these guys are so skilled. That first fight was so fun, the back and forth. This is a question that I was kind of tossing back and forth to myself, because I wasn't really sure myself what I thought about it. So I'll throw it to you first, Alan. Dillashaw, Garbrandt, you know, you had all of the animosity with Dillashaw leaving the camp, obviously them hosting tough against each other, Dillashaw winning the first fight. Who's the bad guy going into this rematch, TJ or Cody?
Man, I love to talk about this because it's really funny how from the beginning, Conor McGregor planted that seed. Oh, TJ's a snake in the grass, you know, and then everybody at Team Alpha Male, the second that TJ left, turned on him and just like went for the jugular. You had, you know, the name calling during the first fight with TJ and Cody where Cody's corner, you know, all the guys in that corner were all like calling him names, like yelling stuff at him, just, you know, tons of just classless stuff that, like, we've come to find out is par for the course from Team Alpha Male. You know, you had the Ultimate Fighter show with both of them where, you know, this guy with a neck tattoo is telling you, hey, this other guy's the bad guy. You know, oh, he left. Well, yeah, he did what was best for him. And, you know, Cody, whether or not it's scripted or not, Cody grabs TJ by the neck. You know, who does that, the good guy or the bad guy? The way it looks to me is that as much as you want to tell us that the orange is an apple, it's an orange. It's not what you tell me it is. It's what I know it is. And whenever you look at the two and you watch their behavior, yeah, TJ's a little cocky, but you know, Cody might come off as this like soft-hearted guy, but whenever they get in the heat of the moment, their true person comes out. And Cody always just seems to have this just nasty attitude. You know, his response to like anything that, you know, TJ says or does, it's always negative. So to me, it's clearly obvious that TJ is not the bad guy in all this. I mean, look, for heaven's sake, you got Justin Buchholz, who has now also left Team Alpha Male and reunited with TJ. I mean, we're probably going to hear even more stories about all the stuff that's come out of this camp you know, with Alpha Male, with, you know, just how they tried to demonize TJ, when all that he's doing is the same thing that every other fighter does, building a camp around him because he's the champ. That's what they're supposed to do, you know? You have to evolve at some point. And at Alpha Male, it seems like there's not a lot of evolution going on. And, you know, I think we're going to find out, you know, who has the better setup. You know, I think that TJ is a better fighter. I think that Cody's a better boxer, and he's a better athlete. But who's evolved? That's who wins this next fight.
Well, as far as who's evolved, I would say that's probably TJ Dillashaw. I mean, we've seen it from his tough days to where he currently is right now as the UFC's bantamweight champion. But as far as who's being painted as more of a bad guy in this one, I mean, yeah, it definitely started with Cody and the Team Alpha Male team, you know, painting TJ as the turncoat. He was the traitor, you know, this, that, and the other. And meanwhile, Cody Garbrandt, not necessarily, you know, doing things that's making himself look good. You know, he's in the ring, break dancing mid-fight. Get out of here with that. If you're dancing in the middle of your fight, or you're, you know, I'm hoping you get knocked out. That's just me. You know, keep your nose to the grindstone. Stay focused. That's, I know I sound like I'm cutting my own promo here, but, you know, TJ Dillashaw, when you see him in there, he's, you know, he's not pulling a whole lot of that. I mean, maybe there's a little reciprocity there, but certainly in pretty much every fight I've ever seen TJ in, versus any other opponent, it's very professional, strictly, you know, about the combat. And it's shocking that there would be such unsightly or unseemly behavior from a group calling themselves Team Alpha Male. Oh my gosh, it's just the ultimate height of douchebaggery, some would say. I mean, Cody really did a good move pulling that little brat into the ring with him once he won that title. I don't know what that was all about. I wasn't really paying attention, but, you know, got some points for that one. But ultimately, I'm siding with TJ in this one. I think Cody's more the bad guy in this one. Whether he's being painted that way or not, that's the way I'm just viewing it. That's my perception in this one.
Man, I'm kind of in my own head. I see Dillashaw as the bad guy here. You know, the whole build up to the first fight was him leaving Alpha Male, and that's all and well. But one thing that I kind of look at, and I think it's kind of fucked up, and, you know, props to Alpha Male for not bringing this up. TJ Dillashaw was a horrendous teammate from when it sounded like, you know, I'm not going to be making any accusations because I'm going all off of hearsay here, but apparently, you know, one of the reasons that Chris Holdsworth wasn't able to continue on with his career is there may have been some sort of a cheap late shot after the bell. And Dillashaw was, and this second part is past the point of hearsay. This is what was widely reported from the camp, that he was a hothead and couldn't control himself. And you know what? If all of that is true, which it might be unfair of me to assume that it is, I say good riddance to TJ. I love Dwayne Ludwig. I actually got a chance to meet him once in Vegas, and he couldn't have been any nicer of a guy. But I don't know. You know, both of them are somewhat sympathetic characters. You just had all of these tweets come out from Cody Garbrandt, which can we just stop this fucking idiotic trend of, like, going 5 or 6 years back on everyone's Twitter to find something offensive they said when they were 18 or 19 years old, and the social media Twitter justice warriors can come after them and point their finger and shame you into what you've done, because that whole thing is starting to get so annoying. But I don't know, you know, it's funny you did mention the whole neck tat. And I do feel like that does equate into a lot of people's way they look at this fight, where, you know, TJ is kind of more the clean cut looking guy, and Garbrandt kind of looks a little sketchy, admittedly. But I don't know. It's been interesting to see how both people look at who is the good guy and who is the bad guy in this one. And honestly, you guys might make a more compelling case that I do now that I really think about it. But let's move on. Final topic of the night, breaking this fight down between Dillashaw and Garbrandt. I feel like I've led everyone off, so I'll pass it to you first, Alan. You know, you obviously have Dillashaw, who was the one-time champ. Lost it to Dominic Cruz, worked his way back up to defeat Rafael Asuncio and John Lineker, and then gets another shot, beats Cody Garbrandt to become the two-time champ. Seemed a little bit salty that he didn't get the immediate rematch, and Cody Garbrandt did. Garbrandt, you know, obviously defeating Cruz back at UFC 207, losing to Dillashaw at UFC 217, getting an injury, which factored into it a little bit, and now getting his immediate rematch against former teammate TJ Dillashaw. Alan, how do you see this fight breaking down between a couple of guys that I think we all can agree that this is all going to come down to whoever's night it is? You know, neither guy is going to win this fight 10 times out of 10, or even 8 times out of 10 for that matter. I think we all can agree they're pretty evenly matched up, and you know, this in large part is going to come down to who is feeling better and what goes down on Saturday night. But Alan, what do you think we see going down in the main event of Saturday night's card, UFC 227?
I don't really know what to say. You can look at the first fight in the first and second round, and it's like a tale of two tapes. It's completely polar opposite, you know, events. The first round, Cody's in charge. You know, he's using the boxing, you know, changing levels, getting TJ to, you know, attack and then being that reactive counter striker that he is, going after TJ with the right hand, with that killer right hand that he possesses. And then catching TJ at the end of the round, knocking him down, TJ recovering, stumbling back, and, you know, we go to the bell, come out the second round, TJ starts fainting, you can tell he's got everything together, TJ's aware, you know, he starts using the tools that he has learned from training camp, from working with Bang, and Cody starts biting on the feints, TJ knows that he's got him, he sets up the head kick, hits Cody with the head kick, knocks him down. And from that point on, you know, TJ is just one step ahead of Cody. You go to this next fight, and I see it being the same thing. Both men, like you said, are not going to win this fight 8 out of 10 times or 9 out of 10 times or even, you know, 5 out of 10. Like, it's literally a toss-up because both of these guys are on the same level as far as, you know, being a fighter and – you know, their credentials. The main thing about it is how much more does Cody's athleticism count than TJ's, you know, training, his ability, his, you know, just his style and how well, you know, they match up against each other. I just think that TJ is a much more well-rounded fighter and has more tools than Cody. And also, if you look at Cody, man, Cody got knocked out in an amateur fight. Like, Cody's been knocked out before. This wasn't the first time. And yeah, Cody's knocked out TJ during sparring and stuff like that. But I mean, that's the gym. That type of stuff happens. I don't really know who to pick. My gut tells me to go with Cody because I just, for some reason, see maybe him. I think that maybe TJ, you know, gets caught this time and Cody's able to actually finish the fight. We'll find out, but if I had to tell you to bet your money, your hard-earned money that you worked for, I would say bet it on TJ because he's a sure bet. I think that he's the better fighter, and I think he's going to pull it out Saturday.
Alan, I'd probably be inclined to agree with you on that call, my man. I mean, both guys, definitely upper echelon, both two of the most recent guys to hold the belt. And both have great skill sets, wrestling, striking, anywhere the fight goes. But TJ, I mean, he's got the height, he's got the reach. I like his kicking arsenal a little bit more. I think it's not just the hands with him. Although Cody has exceptional hands, he's got great power, head movement, all that stuff. TJ, great with the footwork, the diverse arsenal of strikes. Oh my goodness. And it is a tough one to call. I mean, 10 to 15 more seconds in the first round of their first fight, Cody would have retained his championship. I mean, I was very surprised with how quickly TJ was able to recover and come out fresh for that second round and ultimately win that fight. When he was hurt at the end of that first round, I thought he was going to be on rubber legs coming out to round two, but he recovered quickly, bounced back in that fight. But just a couple seconds more, if Cody would have caught him a little cleaner, a little earlier, that would have been all she wrote. But ultimately, the way that fight did end up going, TJ toughed it out, and he did put Cody away. That's ultimately the way it went down. Some would say that at a certain point, the details of how it happened are kind of neither here nor there. For that reason, and for that logic, I think I'm going to say TJ. I mean, he won the first time. You guys know me. I typically go with the person who won the fight the first time. This one's no different. It's a very rare exception when I do mix it up. And usually when I do mix it up, I end up regretting it. I mean, if you've already won a fist fight with a person before, you got to do a lot to overcome that and make those decisions or make those corrections to come back. Because again, styles make fights, and I think TJ may just have Cody in this one. So I'm thinking TJ gets it done. I think this fight only lasts one round this time. I think these guys are still super heated. I think it's done early. TJ gets it done again. Another TKO.
Man, I am going back and forth, and if you would have asked me a few days ago, I think I probably would have taken Dillashaw. But right now, you know, I am just thinking, we saw both fighters connect on their home run strike during the first fight. Garbrandt landing that vicious, you know, showing off that vicious punching power, and Dillashaw landing that beautiful head kick. If I had to pick which I think lands that home run hit again in the first one, I'm saying I lean toward Garbrandt landing the punch. I think, you know, Cody's going to be coming in here with a chip on his shoulder. I think he, although the first fight, you know, wasn't that long, I think he learned a few things that were very important. I think Cody's probably going to focus on cutting TJ off more with his angles and not allowing Dillashaw to have that movement and freedom and kind of create those angles like he did to finish that first fight. So, man, you know, is back and forth as I am on this one, and maybe I'm just going with Garbrandt because I want to see the trilogy fight eventually because both of these guys are so exciting. I think I will go with Cody Garbrandt here. And if I let, man, as many times as I want to see this fight, I don't know if I want to see the trilogy immediately, because Bantamweight currently is a stacked-up, loaded-ass, beautiful division, and there are a ton of fights to be made at 35 after this one. But I think we are truly looking at the number one and number two at this weight class, whichever way you want to rank the two fighters. And I think that does it for this episode of the MMA Podcast. We appreciate you listening very, very, very much. We're also, like last episode and probably many episodes in the future, dedicating this one to our boy Ramses. We love and miss the shit out of you, brother. Alan, anything for the people before we sign off and bid TMP, what, I guess this is episode 241, adieu?
Yeah, I saved this for the end of the podcast just in case you want to take it off and edit it in post-production. But, man, what is up with DJ, the greatest fighter in the world, having to swim in an above-ground swimming pool while TJ Dillashaw and Cody Garbrandt are flying around in private jets, drinking champagne, private tailors visiting them, running around in Ferraris? What's up with that? The greatest fighter of all time has to buy his kid a praying mantis that probably costs 3 cents from the pet store because they don't give him enough money to buy a Ferrari. What's up with that?
Dropping hot ass takes. Follower boy Alan on Twitter at Westland Eagle AH. Pat, anything before we let the people go?
Well, you know, as you mentioned, Jake, just shouts out to Ramses. You know, we still feeling that loss. Got nothing but love for Ramses. It was so great to work with him and get to know him over the years. But also, man, sadly, I got to shout out and say rest in peace to Derek Cassell, one of my good friend's little brothers. Man, I just found out the news last night about his passing. We were watching UFC 100 at his house. It was a, you know, family affair. We would always get together for the cards and everything like that. So been a rough week, you know. So this one's for the homie Derek. This one's for the homie Ramses. Nothing but love for the people, and rest in peace to my brothers there.
Rest in peace to the homies. We hope you are able to watch, enjoy UFC 227. We will be back after that card to recap it. We may be back tomorrow, Friday, depending how nuts this press conference goes. They are going to be doing one of these seasonal press conferences where they call together a bunch of fighters fighting in the next few months for fights. And there are rumors that they're going to announce Conor versus Habib officially for October for UFC. I think it would be 229. Which is pretty close. It's, I think, in 11 weeks. So fingers crossed for that one. Nice to finally see that fight get made. But yeah, if it's wild enough and enough news comes out there, we may be back shorter than anticipated to talk about that. But we will be back regardless after UFC 227 to break it down. Big thanks, of course, to Alan, Pat, and everyone listening. We love the shit out of you. And until the next episode, we gone.